Hey guys, welcome back to the Morningstar Men's Ministry podcast. We're in our fifth week now in the series, What to Do When You Don't Know What to Do. And by now we have really covered some important principles. Just want to remind you though that all of these principles are nothing but theory if we don't know how to put them into practice in our lives. So let me do a quick recap or a review of some of the main principles that we've talked about. The first is that there are a series of filters that we can run almost any decision through. And while that won't guarantee a perfect answer or a right answer, if there is one, it's going to eliminate a lot of bad options for every decision that we make. And so we said the first one is it within God's general law of love for human living? The second one we said, does it bring the opportunity or the chance for God to receive glory or honor? Not that that by itself is always a standalone objective, but it's an important consideration. Equally important is the reverse of that. Does it run the risk of bringing dishonor to God and to His kingdom? Beyond that, then, we said that each of us needs to understand clearly our unique life purpose, and that decisions need to align nicely with our purpose. If they don't, then it's going to lead us away from what we really need to be doing in life, not toward it. Another important filter that we run things through is, does this decision align nicely with who I am as a person? My skill sets, my gifting, my talents, my capabilities, all that stuff. Does it align nicely with that? And we might even throw in there resources. Does it align nicely with the resources that might be available to me? We said next that another filter is to remember that every decision that we make is not only one that impacts us, but that frankly it impacts a lot of other people. So we need to take into account those other people whom our decisions will impact. Now, we can't know the full extent of that, obviously, but some of the major significant players in our lives, close friends, family members, business associates or partners, those kinds of people, we need to filter our decisions through that. How is it going to impact those closest to us? And then the final decision that we introduced last week was, is there a season in life in which this decision might be right, and are there seasons in life when this decision might be wrong? And if you want to make a choice to do something, but you're not in the right season, then patience is the imperative or operative word. All right, beyond that, we looked at another collection of ideas. They were these three principles. Number one, decide what you want. Decide firmly. Understand what you want in life, some of the big things that you want in life. Behind that, though, you have to back it up with these two qualifiers. Decide what you are willing to give in exchange for that. What will you have to pay? What price are you willing to pay in order to achieve it? So let's say that hypothetically you wanted to be a great Olympic gymnast, but you were only able to give an hour a day to training. Well, those two are incompatible with each other. So you need to understand the price that you'll have to pay to obtain anything that you want in life. And then we need to be honest with ourselves. Am I willing to pay this price? And then the third factor there, which is corollary to the first two, is decide what things you are not willing to give up in exchange for this. So if you're not willing to sacrifice your family, if you're not willing to sacrifice your health, if you're not willing to place all of your finances at risk, and those are the only ways that you could obtain this, then it's probably not the right thing for you. And then we introduced another key point, which is, we said, decide in life everything that you want before you choose anything that you want. And we said this because each choice that we make, if it's a major choice, is going to require daily management of the choice. In the simplest of examples, we can say, if I choose to be married, then that impacts every other area of my life. It limits the resources that I have, the time that I have to give to other things. It not only blesses my life, but it also in certain ways restricts or places limitations on my life. For that reason, it's healthy to decide or to put into place all of the things that you want. You say, well, I've already made some key decisions, fair enough, but there are still many other decisions that you're going to have to make. So from this moment on, actually life coaches or life planners make a recommendation that about every year you should have a personal summit with yourself where you meet with yourself for a day and you review the major objectives of your life. Where do you want to be? What do you want to be? Who do you want to be? What are the things that you believe you're called on to do or would like to achieve in the remainder of your life? And you need to put all of them down in a way that you can see them and look at them jointly, and then from there you can see what resources you have that you can give to each one of those things and apply those principles of what you're willing to give and what you're not willing to sacrifice for them. All right, so then This morning, in our series, we introduced still another idea, and that is that life is inherently filled with problems. And we said it this way. We said that every time that you attempt something new that we'll call a challenge, and even if it isn't a challenge for somebody else because they've already figured out how to do it, it's still a challenge for you because you haven't figured out how to do it. And every time that you and I face challenges in life, we're bound to experience problems because problems are a revelation of the fact that we don't know everything or don't have everything needed in order to do the thing that we want to do, hence the name challenge. Now, for that reason, we said this. Challenges are always going to reveal problems, and problems will always precede solutions. You will not go directly from a challenge to a solution. There always is going to be an intermediate phase in your life where you're dealing with the problem phase. How do you solve the problems? Problems are a natural part of life. They're not a side effect. They're not something that you should expect you'll avoid if you do things the right way. As a matter of fact, if you tackle anything big, you are going to live your life in a series of problems. And we also said this, that because you're doing many things in life, you have many responsibilities. You're a father, you're a husband maybe, you're a business owner or a business manager, or you work in a business and you're an employee, you're a coach for your son's team or daughter's team, all of those things, because all of those roles are present in your life, you should expect that you will have multiple problems that you are managing at all times throughout all phases of your life. That is the natural and normal state of human existence. Don't expect it to be otherwise, or you'll be disappointed. The cool thing about this is not that problems are always easy. The cool thing to understand about this is that once you can be at peace with the fact that it's not you doing something way wrong that's causing the problems, but rather that problems are the normal condition of human experience when humans are trying anything that matters, that you can live at peace with the fact that problems are normal. And you can also live at peace with the fact that at any given moment, you don't have all the answers. You don't know everything that you need to know in order to solve the problem. Well, now, if you stop and reflect on that, and just pause this right now, and stop and reflect on that for a few minutes, it should make you more at peace with yourself. Oh, I don't need to have all the answers right at this moment. It's not something inherently wrong with me that means that I have problems in my life. Not at all. Problems are the normal state of life. So I hope you're going to enjoy today's podcast. We've got a couple more weeks in this series, which I think will be very instructive. Remember this final point before we move into today's teaching. It's not what you know. It's what you do with what you know that really counts. All right. Enjoy the presentation, guys. I think that there is one resounding theme that I wanted to make sure that everyone took away from all this, and we're in our fifth week, so we've already looked at a lot of material. The main point is that I believe more people become perplexed by managing the choices that they have made in the past than by new choices that they have to make. And even if that's not true for you, every major life choice has within it what we're going to call a series of opportunities, but also challenges and problems. We're going to get into problems in a minute. That is going to be one of our feature elements for today. But before we get into that, let's just read this top quote. Current success can kill future success. That's a quote from somebody or lifted from something that I listened to. A healthy discontent is necessary to promote future achievement. So stop and think about that for a moment before we even read on. Have you ever become content with where you are, with what you have, with what you're experiencing? At work, at home, your relationships? Have you ever gotten to the point where, I can finally breathe now. It's all good. And how long can you live like that? Okay, so we've got one taker for quite a while, and you're saying for an hour. So just to flesh this out a little bit more, very briefly, I know sometimes brevity is a challenge here, but very briefly, and I'm going to take from the man at the back of the room there first.
You won't breathe, you go ahead first. Well,
I'm giving you the opportunity to reestablish your reputation.
I will say I was where Vic is at. I was where he was at as something to
Okay, so you're talking about an aspiration, and I'm not there yet, and I have this aspiration to arrive at something. That's good. For you, that was pretty brief, too. I admire you for that.
Content or part of my accountability.
Okay. Read this next part. Complacency leads to failure. So contentment in the moment is a good thing. As a matter of fact, we're encouraged to be content in the moment. But what does that mean? Is it possible to be content and yet dissatisfied at the same time? It seems like a contradiction in terms, but is it? Okay, wisdom from the jungle.
He uses that sort of thing, you know what I mean? And so, I think you can be dissatisfied and hungry. So you know what? Man, I'm hungry.
Well, what do you think that Paul is suggesting when he says that we should be content? Is contentment the same as it's okay wherever I am?
It is. I think you're still longing for more of what God has for us.
I'm not looking for circumstances to give me happiness.
Okay, there you go. So I can live full in the moment. This situation isn't going to rob my joy from me, but it doesn't mean that I'm satisfied with the situation the way it is. So contentment in the moment is not contentment in the long term, and that's what I think we're trying to grasp here, is that to be complacent is to be satisfied not only in the moment, it's to be just satisfied. That's good enough. That's okay.
Just to break my heart for the sermons that Pastor John gave in the series, God or good, we're good or God. Seeking God, seeking good, can miss God. This thing, current success, seek financial success, and until future success is kids who grow up and not knowing who their parents are. I'm a prodigal of that type of relationship. I don't talk very often with my mom or my dad because they grew up without either one of them. And now in their sense of stability and having arrived at a success point financially,
incidentally, if you actually look at these notes and want to save them, in the parentheses after complacency leads to failure, it should read satisfaction with good is a sure way to avoid seeking better. So as long as you're okay with where you are, and actually this next part will really enforce that, you will not change what you're willing to tolerate. Sustained urgency to excel is the solution to complacency. So if you don't always have a higher bar that you're striving for, then you've essentially become content and complacent with where you are. So in every major area of your life, is there a next bar? And we're going to see why this matters in a moment. Maybe a quote from Andy Stanley would be appropriate here. He says, and this is in a ministry sense, he says, date your process, marry your mission. In other words, whatever it is that your heart has been commissioned to do, so to speak, whatever your thinking, your decision making has been commissioned to do, that you marry. But the way in which you go about doing it so that you achieve the best outcome, that's going to change in every new season of life. All right, so now we're going to look at this grid here next. So I'd like you to think of one area in your life, a major area. Maybe it's a big relationship. Maybe it's work. Maybe it's some ministry thing. Maybe it's something you've been doing for a long time, or maybe it's something you want to do. and we're going to filter it through this. So over here, your passion for the thing. And then along this line, the progress that you're making. All right. Have you ever started something that you weren't passionate about? Probably not that you stayed at for very long, right? We all are passionate about things that we begin, generally speaking, or we don't begin them. Have you ever failed to achieve any progress? And this can even be relationally. It doesn't have to be like success in business or something. Every major relationship that you have, you want this same thing to be true. You want to be making some progress in the relationship. So let's look at a marriage relationship, because it's easy to break down here. So suppose you have a sort of a safe, but not really significantly intimate relationship. In other words, you talk about stuff, you talk about the routine stuff, you talk about paying the bills, you talk about all this other stuff, but you are not satisfied with the progress that you're making. And so gradually, you take this thing to the next level. And you become safe with each other, learn to trust each other a little bit more, and as you build trust with each other, you're able to talk about deeper things. So your excitement level for this relationship is building, and you feel you're making progress. Now, as the result of having established a level of trust, you start to talk about things with your mate that you've never talked about before. Hurts, wounds, disappointments, things that you feel now you're safe to talk with her about that you weren't able to talk with her about before. What happens? It puts a whole new level of stress on the relationship. Before, you couldn't trust somebody to talk about that. Now you feel you've opened the relationship to the degree that you can trust somebody. You're making progress, but as a result of making that progress, you elevate the relationship to a whole new level where there are different challenges that you're going to have to meet. Have you ever made progress and wished you could put it all back in the box because it simply takes you to new problems? It's a tough question, but progress is always going to lead you to new problems. That's not the way we want life to work. It's not the way we're frequently led to believe that life should work. As a matter of fact, most of us believe that if we do things the right way, we're going to gradually travel out of problems and into continued success. Now, how does this normally work when we try to make progress? Because this is another frustrating thing. Have you ever... Let's use this illustration. Suppose you've got a locked door, and you're going to be the hero, so you're going to break the door down. All right? You're just going to slam into it and break that door down because there's somebody you need to save on the other side. Stupid illustration, but it makes the point well. What do you do the first time you try to hit the door? Do you go at it all out? Or do you test it? You test it. You don't quite give it your all, do you? And you find out, wow, this is a little bit more stubborn than I thought it was going to be.
Actually, it depends.
You naturally would give it your all. I know you would. Yes, you would. Okay. Ah.
If your loved ones are on the other side of that door and the house is on fire, that's a different thing.
Yeah.
You're going to go with the door with everything you have the first time because it's coming off the first time. But if it's just somebody... Maybe you don't even know if there's anybody in there. You might test it. You'll feel the knock. You'll make sure that there's, see if there's any fire. Because if the family's on the other side, you don't care if there's any fire on the other side.
Guys, if it's you on the other side of the door, I think we've heard Brother Jim is not going to give his best on the first shot.
There's guys in this room that I've realized everything I have the first time.
All right. What about the second time? I think looking at myself, and maybe this isn't true for all of us, I think looking at myself, the first time is just to test the door, or maybe to test me. The second time is to really seriously find out if it's going to move. And I'm probably not going to give it my all until the third time. But I've still not made any progress. I'm excited, right? My passion is peaking because a good challenge engages you, does it not? You didn't win the first game, so you try the second. You didn't win the second game, so you're really committed to win the third. Maybe the second one was pretty close. You're still pretty excited. What happens if the third time you body slam the door, you bruise your shoulder, and the door is still intact?
And you come up with a different approach.
Okay.
And then there's on the other side of the door. It depends if you pull
it. Okay, the door is just an illustration, so let's not make it all about the door. Let's not get consumed with the door. What happens after the third or the fourth attempt? And now you're wounded in the attempt. Have you ever tried to make forward progress in a relationship, make forward progress in a business situation, and ended up wounded in the process? What happens to your passion level, though?
It starts with parental discouragement.
Yeah, right. So if, after repeated attempts to make progress, no progress is made, your passion level starts to wane. But if, on the other hand, you continue to make progress, have you ever been in a situation where you achieved success after success, but it really didn't matter to you? Think in a business situation where it's like, okay, things are going well. You land the next new contract, the next big thing. Maybe you get the next raise. Maybe you get the next elevation in position at work, whatever it is. But it doesn't matter as much to you. You're achieving progress, but there is no passion. Ever been there? So I think the way that we measure the healthiness of our commitments is, where are we here? Where are we here? And if you come back to this explanation, you can see what happens when there's no passion and no progress. Can you picture a relationship or a situation in your life right now where you're there? So you have this diagram. You don't need it up on the board anymore. What are some of the major life accounts that you have? You've got some sort of a vocation, I'm assuming. That's not vacation, that's vocation. What's another life account that you have?
Marriage.
We got to break it down. So Paul has isolated. Okay, now, each individual child, if you have kids, is a life account all by itself. So let's not generalize. Have you ever been in a situation where you felt you were making great progress in a relationship with one kid and no progress whatsoever in a relationship with another kid? So you need to break this down. If you're going to be successful at the things that you say matter the most in your life, you need to be able to isolate and evaluate. Okay, so children, one at a time. Apparently, John, I was wrong. I don't have good markers. Nah, it's okay. I got more in the drawer. I got more bad markers to fall back on. Look at that. That's a good marker. All right, what else? Come on, we're all so busy. We claim we don't have any additional time. Okay, hobbies.
Friends.
I know some of you are going to go away feeling guilty now because you haven't invested heavily, and this is not to make you feel guilty about anything. What else?
Volunteering and different things. Okay, so could
we call that personal ministry? Of one sort or another, and don't get hung up on the word ministry. Any time that you exert yourself to do good for somebody else, it's a form of ministry. All right. Despite the fact that I write too large, and therefore there's not enough room on the board, is there anything else that we want to add to the list? Y'all filled? Yeah, of course. Because if you don't take care of yourself, don't put the orange cap on the red marker. It doesn't fit and then it gets stuck. So we'll put self or personal management and maintenance. Yeah, that's a big account. Wow, see? This is a good list. I don't want to leave John's unwritten down because it was a good one. We need a one-word explanation for that. He said maintenance of all the things in life. So
chores.
That's a good enough list. When is the last time that you had all them before you on a list and started to evaluate, am I making progress in this? What's my commitment level at this? Remember what we said, how we introduced this, complacency will lead to future failure. What's the opposite of complacency?
Being driven,
but let's say at very least engagement. When Paul uses the word driven, I don't know, the way it came out, it just...
Huh?
Okay. So that's a negative drivenness, which I kind of thought he was going for. But motivated and engaged would certainly be the good alternative to being complacent. If you don't have a list of these things, and that's your personal list of things, and if you are not inventorying regularly the progress that you are making in each of these things, then what's going to happen? I mean, let's take a look at your children. Because it's easy to lump all of your kids together and say, well, I'm being a good father. But if you're being a good father to your children as a collective whole, are you being a good father to each of your children individually? Are they individuals? Do they have specific needs? Are they at different stages or places in life, and therefore do you need to deal with them individually? How do you know that if you're not monitoring it? So again, we come back to this thing where we said a while back, we said it this way, choose or decide everything that you want before you choose anything that you want. The bigger this list grows, the less time you have to deal with any of it.
Well, that list needs to be prioritized regularly.
Yes, it does. Now we come back to the thank you. The list needs to be prioritized. Where do you cut first?
Remember when I said the urgency?
Yeah.
My kid just got arrested. That changes the list completely. My wife just got dealt a nasty blow at the hospital. That changes the list sometimes completely. Sometimes it turns upside down. I thought everything was going along with great.
And isn't that the way life works?
But can you do it?
As a matter of fact, does everybody that wanted to write this... Well, it's too late now. If you didn't write it down, it's gone.
Here's a picture there. Yeah, just
perhaps now...
Everybody takes a personal assessment of their life and prioritizes. I think we can all come into agreement that one, it's God first, that's your family, that's your work, and all those other things fall into place. Hobbies sometimes should be probably on the bottom of the list. Missions should be closer to the top of the list. And I believe if you're spiritually in alignment with the Lord, of course, you're going to seek His kingdom first, His righteousness, and everything else will follow.
And that is the textbook way to say that. But it very rarely works out like that.
Correct. Because the flesh always gets in the way, doesn't it?
You know what I mean? Well, it's more than the flesh always gets in the way. So we said, he said God first.
What?
And then he said family second. What does it take in order to care for your family? How many hours do you have face-to-face time with your family versus the number of hours that you are doing something that you have no face-to-face time with your family in order to care for them?
I just heard a stat this week that interaction with kids, probably personally one-on-one, less than 15 minutes a day.
Yeah, I've heard that before. Yeah.
15 minutes.
Less. Could be less.
Yeah.
Face-to-face contact.
Well, and it just speaks to the discipline problems that exist. And I'm not talking with kids. I'm talking with adults, mature adults, the discipline problems that exist. Discipline. I watched a movie last night with my machine.
The jazz drummer guy, right? Yep.
This was and driven to excel. I want to do this, and I only want to do this. And the guy, you know, at first everybody thinks that this guy's a real jerk, and, you know, he's just, you know, it's not fair, blah, 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 blah. And he uses a line in that movie that I absolutely love. He says, the two most dangerous words in the English language are good job. Because it puts us right on our heels, and we just sort of go, okay. Now, I don't mean that to say you don't encourage someone, but there's that in my life personally has been one of those sort of things that when it's said, kind of do you kind of go,
yeah, that's the start of complacency then.
It's the start of
yeah, but with the Lord, don't we know that we're never going to
But it's, again, it's easy for us to read that. But we read some of the things and say, keep going, keep striving, keep doing everything that you can do, and you know, and I'll be there for you, and I'll, you know, and we do that. But so oftentimes the reality, you know, says is the world will persecute you in more than one way. So when you try to make progress, and when your passion is high,
all right, let's go over to Romans. I'm not sure which order I want to introduce this now, because some of the conversation has taken us in some directions that are part of the topic for the morning, but they're a little bit out of order. So let's just turn over to Romans 5. Because you've introduced a good idea with this thinking of what happens if some crisis occurs in my marriage? Something happens to my wife. Something happens to one of my children. And how does that change my priorities? All right. 5, and we're going to read the first several verses. Therefore, since we have been justified through faith, we have peace with God through our Lord Jesus Christ, through whom we have gained access by faith into this grace in which we now stand. All right, there's two things going on. Both of them take faith, it says, but they're two different experiences. So the first one, he says, is since we have been justified by faith. In other words, the relationship debt has been canceled. We have been made right with God. But that doesn't mean that we experience that. Just because we have been made right with God doesn't mean that we sense that in a daily basis. So then he goes on to say, through whom we have gained access by faith into this grace in which we now stand. So it's a great illustration. So imagine that I am standing in the middle of the room and the entire room is filled with grace for me. And he says, that takes a different type of faith or a different degree of faith. So the first kind of faith is, I believe that something that Jesus did has made it possible for me to now be right with God. The relationship is not damaged. But that doesn't mean I'm living in the experience of freedom. Remember a couple of weeks ago we said, well, actually at the start of this series, we said that the mission of Christ was to facilitate our being able to live in freedom. But that freedom then we said we could deploy, not for selfish means, but as a means of service. And that service then became the means of life satisfaction and enjoyment. Remember what we said all that. That freedom used to pursue selfish gain in the end leads to disappointment. Freedom used to pursue service to others in the end leads to satisfaction. So let's bring it back to this question now. Is it possible to be right with God and yet not experience the joy of being in relationship with God?
Yeah.
Have you ever agonized over whether what you were doing had placed you beyond God's love?
No.
Okay, we got a no there. We have a
no. No, that was never a question. Whether or not he was listening to me at the time, whether or not he was engaged, like all good parents want to be engaged, I often question that. Are you listening? Are you there? I know he loves me, but he might be trying to save another part of the world at a given point in time. He's just not listening to me.
Well,
it can feel like that.
My position doesn't change.
No.
That personal relationship, am I living in obedience and it's his favor and blessing on my life right now? May not be. He always loves me.
And when you move to the next verses, it explains it.
But I believe that many of us are glossing over seasons in our life where we weren't experiencing what we believe to be the love of God. Because we, and even if we were obedient.
Define that for me, William. What What does the love of God look like then? If you feel like
well, the greater your level of maturity, the more understanding you have. Remember what we used last week, the illustration of Mother Teresa, who said that later on when her journals were opened, it revealed that a lot of her life she felt like she was not walking in the presence. She felt like she was doing what she needed to do, but she was not experiencing the blessing or favor of God. It takes faith to believe that God loves you. How do you know God loves you? Can you prove that? Well, the answer is no. So there is a degree of faith, and this is what Paul is saying. It takes faith to accept that what Jesus done makes you right with God. It takes faith to believe that God loves you and to walk in His favor every day. Both take faith.
Yeah. Do your parents love you? Prove it.
Right. You cannot prove it except by their actions. Well, have we ever had seasons in life that would suggest to the person who lacked faith that God is not for me right now? Have you ever had a season of life that if you were to just look at it at face value, based on the circumstances, you could say, wow, it doesn't look like God's for me right now?
Oftentimes when you see someone, even someone disciplining a child, and you think to yourself, man, maybe they really do love them, and that child is a problem, and that is keeping them safe. That is keeping them in line. That is doing them a service and not a disservice. And I'm not talking about wailing on a kid, but you know what I mean? Snatching one up, smacking one under anyone. Now, what did I tell you?
Okay.
Stay here.
Well, let's move on, because he answers the question, actually, and he answers it in the affirmative. And we rejoice in this hope of the glory of God. Not only so, but we also rejoice in the sufferings. So he moves from two types of faith. Faith that what Jesus has done, I need to place faith, confidence in the fact that that's all I need. And that I need to place faith, confidence in God that He does show His grace toward me, even if I don't feel it every moment of the day. I'm right with God, I'm experiencing the grace of God, I may not feel either of them in the moment. Okay, so two separate reasons why we need to trust. We move from there to two different types of rejoice. And we rejoice in the hope of the glory of God. That's future tense. We rejoice in hope. What do you hope for? You can only hope for something you don't already have, because the moment you have it, you no longer need to hope for it. Agreed? Okay. So we are hoping toward the glory of God. What's that? Our future outcome. Face to face with God, experiencing whatever comes next. But we also rejoice, so we're rejoicing in the future, but we also rejoice in our sufferings. Future or present tense sufferings? Present tense, right? We're experiencing sufferings in the present tense. So we also rejoice in our sufferings, not because we're sick, sadistic people. We rejoice in our sufferings, and he goes on to explain that, because we know that suffering produces perseverance. All right, and then we're going to quickly read on through this. Perseverance, character, and character, hope. And hope does not disappoint us, because God has poured His love into our hearts by the Holy Spirit whom He has given us. All right, so before we get to the end of that logic train, let's just back up and say, suffering produces perseverance. Let's turn over to...
Well, let me give 3 through 5 on that.
Go ahead, read it.
There's more to come. We continue to shout our praise, even when we're handling with trouble. Because we know how trouble can develop passion and patience in us. And how that patience can turn gorgeous and tempered steel of virtue, keeping us alert for whatever God will be next. In alert expectancy such as this, we're never left to ensure change. Quite the contrary, we can't matter enough to hand and hold everything God generously poured into our lives with the Holy Spirit.
Let me take us over to James, first chapter. Keep your thumb or something, throw a pencil in that Romans text. So he says, suffering produces perseverance, and he implies that that's good. All right, James 1, we're going to look at the third verse. Because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. But then look at what James says, that seems to qualify what Paul is saying. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete. So persevering for a season and then finding the exit ramp so that you no longer have to persevere prevents perseverance from having its finished work in us. So remember what we talked about, the passion and the progress thing. When we feel that we're not making progress, the passion ebbs, and what do we do? What is the natural human... Remember that list of accounts that we had on the board? Work, individual family members, all that. What happens when I'm not making progress in one of those areas? What is my tendency?
Let it go.
Or... And not just let it go. That's half the tendency. What's the other? I pour more energy into one of those other accounts, don't I? Right. I still have the...
I'm going to go where I know I can do it.
I'm going to go where I know I can make some progress, right? Because what one of us doesn't want to experience progress?
It's not working at home. I'm going to go to work home. Well, that's good.
But what's he say here in James? He says, if you don't allow perseverance to finish its work in you, and now we'll come back to Romans. Suffering produces perseverance. And in the broadest of senses, let's not look at suffering as you've just been tied to the rack and you're being stretched, okay? Let's look at suffering as the more general state of our problems and conditions in life. I realize that's not always the way he's implying it here. There may have been some real suffering. But he's saying suffering produces perseverance. Let's temper that with what James says. Perseverance has to finish its job before you're going to arrive where? At the condition of having character. If you short-circuit the process by bailing on certain of these challenging things, what's the character equation? You never achieve it. Have you ever been caught in a cycle of just running to the thing that was bringing you satisfaction or success and avoiding the difficult things? Yeah, we do that. And yet, here's the amazing thing, and this is where I wanted to introduce this thing. Remember what Jim said, well, if something happens to one of my family members, it changes my equation a lot. Here's what we would like to have happen. I'm going through a season of life. I have a problem. I fix this problem. It goes back up, and I move on with my life. Okay? Life is good. The car breaks. It's a single problem. I deal with it. I fix the car. I fix the foundation of my house. Life's good again, and I move on. Have you ever experienced more than one problem at a time?
Yes.
Right? Have you ever experienced this? And I'm just going to use lame examples. You fill in your own life. Okay, I'm going along, and the bill for the car arrives. But before I have time to pay the bill for the car, the water heater breaks. And that's another $400 or $500. Now I got to dig out of that hole. And the kid gets sick, or let's take in a relational element here, because both of these have been basically financial. You throw some money at it, the problem goes away. If you don't have any money to throw at it, the problem just lingers a little bit longer, or you walk or you shower with cold water for a while. Don't ask me how I know that, just moving on. All right, now, what about a relationship problem that's occurring at the same time? Now, do we have phrases that we can look at in common language that describe this? Have you ever heard the phrase, when it rains, it pours? Is that a phrase that the originator was using to describe weather? No, of course not. Is it? What's being said? It seems that whenever problems come my way, they never come one at a time. Have you ever heard the theory, well, problems always come in threes? Right? Where does that come from? I mean, I know that sounds superstitious. And what happens in our psyche when that sort of thing starts to happen? Yes, right? Remember what we said? It takes faith to believe that we're walking regularly in the abundant grace of God. It's easy to have faith that we are walking in the abundant grace of God when maybe there's one problem and we can manage it. All right, maybe a second problem comes into life and we say, well, I can still manage it. What does it feel like when there's three or four problems that you're managing at the same time? How do you feel? Do you feel like you are walking in the abundant grace of God? And don't give me your textbook theory about what the Bible says right then. How do you feel right at that moment?
Well, the reason the book has to say
yes, go on. Exactly. Exactly.
Man, relax. Still got it. I know you're tired. I'm not expecting you. I didn't even expect you to run right now. Just don't stop. Breathe in and out, put one foot in front of the other. Breathe in and out, put one foot in front of the other. When that kid was trying to do the upswing, and he was trying to keep that tempo, and he finally hooked the tempo, and he heard it, and the teacher goes, don't stop, don't stop, don't stop.
If nobody else saw the movie, it doesn't mean anything to them.
But,
so we're having a private conversation right now.
The kid finally gets it, and the teacher goes, don't stop, don't stop. As hard as he's playing, as big as he's leading, don't stop. You got it. And he goes from that mean, nasty guy to the encourager.
Mm-hmm.
Don't stop. You got it. And this is oftentimes God looking. People can look at God as ferocious. And, you know, it can be this sort of like overbearing, oh man, you know what I mean? He's looking down on us. And they forget the part where he goes, not good job. Not your gun. You got it. Keep moving. You got it. Keep going. You got it. Keep moving. Keep moving. Don't stop. I keep going. You know what I mean? It's easy for us to come to that place where everything you're talking about, relation, don't think that you're alive. You don't get too alive until he shows up on the horse. Then you can say, all right. Until that day, just...
He does that, and then he's gone. I hope you didn't forget what you were going to say.
The moment's passed.
The moment's passed. You forgot what you were going to say.
No, I'm just not relevant after all that.
You know, the one thing I would say is this is all really interesting because it depends where you are in your walk with Christ. You know, looking back on 27 years now, how ill-equipped I was in those early years to balance all these things in a spiritual sense. And also, it's the busiest part of your life, too. Your kids are growing, your career is growing, and everything like that. But, you know, it's. I look at you younger guys here, and I put myself back into that position. And it's a lot easier for me now to say, oh, I can handle this, or I can deal with these things. It's tough. I mean, you really need to dig into God's Word. You need to journal. I think journaling is something I've done later in life. I wish I would have done it earlier in life, like once a week, at least once a week to journal. And you can kind of do an inventory where you are in a lot of those things. But, you know, I don't want you to think, you shouldn't be thinking that it's going to be easy because God's Word says, you know, this is the prescription for dealing with these things.
Okay, turn over to James 4. Okay, so far we have seen Paul say that you have to deal with suffering if you're going to have any character development, if you're going to have any perseverance. All right, you have to allow, James says, perseverance to finish its work. In other words, you need to keep on keeping on until you reach the breakthrough. Otherwise, you never develop any character. How long, then, do you have to keep on keeping on? Until, right? And we don't know the until. And that's what's frustrating. If we could say, oh, if I just go one more mile down the road, I'll reach success, we could find the energy to do that. But what if you've walked 1 mile, and then 1 mile, and 1 mile, and 1 mile, and you don't know where the breakthrough is going to occur? What does that do to your psyche? It does, doesn't it? And that's part of character development. And yet James says, you've got to allow this to take its course, otherwise you'll never develop the character. Okay, now we go over to James 4. We'll start at the beginning of the chapter. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? You want something. Don't we all want something? He's not judging us for wanting something. You want something, but you don't get it. And so, and forget the word kill and covet here, you cannot have what you get. You resort to these means. What he's saying is, you step outside a legitimate process to obtain the desire, and you short-circuit the process. In other words, the excruciating difficulty of suffering through this thing is not worth it. I'll just take a shortcut and figure a way around it to get what I want. What does that look like in your marriage? Well, in the end, it looks like an affair. One way or another, I'm not getting what I want at home, right? I'm not getting the respect I want. I'm not getting the attention I want. I'm not getting the whatever I want. And rather than working through the process, I just take a shortcut. I go a different way to get what I want. Nobody is condemning us for having desires. What we're saying is, if you want to pursue a desire legitimately, it might take a while till you get a breakthrough. And if you're not willing to pursue it until you get a breakthrough, the temptation that we all face is just find some shortcut around this so I can get something that I need. Yeah. And that was a really long process, wasn't it? All right, I think I have... Well, let's go back now to Romans and finish this thought train. So suffering produces perseverance, and remember we've inserted that caveat that James added, that I have to stay in that perseverant state for a while until it finishes its work in me. Perseverance produces character. This is what Paul talked about, and I just let that sit until now. The reason that Paul says that certain things in his life feel easier now is not because they are easier. What's really going on? Well, Paul described it. He said there's 27 years of walking this walk. So as in the process of building character for 27 years, certain things are easier now than they used to be. Remember how we started this? Remember how we started this in week one, and I said this would feel at the moment like a bait and switch. We started out with a discussion about spiritual fitness. We said that spiritual fitness was the process of developing better responses to every situation in life. And how do we say spiritual fitness is obtained? And I use that metaphor of the competitive sport. Anybody remember? There were a number of components that were necessary to achieve spiritual fitness. Well, the first was I had to know game theory, right? If I'm going to play any sport, I need to know the rules. I need to know how to play the game. I need to know all the ins and outs of that game, whether it's individual sport or whether it's a competitive team sport. I need to know the rules. I need to know how the game works. I need to know the plays in the game. What was another one of the things that I needed to do? I'm always amazed at how profound my impact is on y'all. Another one of those was I needed to get out there and I needed to develop personal spiritual fitness. So for the athlete, what did that mean? Time in the weight room. Time just developing strength. So for the athlete, it means two kinds of strength. It means actual physical strength, but it also means stamina. It doesn't do you any good as you persevere through life if you have strength for a little while, but you stop short of finishing. So spiritual fitness is both stamina and strength. What was another one of the things in this metaphor? We've covered two. I need to know game theory. I need to develop strength and stamina in my spiritual life. What's the next one? Well, I need to practice, right? I need to have opportunities to practice what I'm learning. So every new day in this challenging, problematic situation that you're in, whether it's relationally, whether it's career or whatever, you have a new opportunity to practice with the new acquired strength and stamina that you have. So the first day that you go to the gym and you try to lift 400 pounds, right? You struggle with that a little bit. I'm assuming you struggle with it. Tell me you struggle with that, right? Good, because I would feel really bad if you didn't struggle with that. All right, so by the end of 2 years at the gym, you walk over to the 400 pounds and you gracefully lift it with ease. Giving you the benefit of the doubt there, right? Just nod your head. Yes. But there was a process getting from I can't lift 100 pounds to I can lift 400 pounds. You are becoming, if you work this process, you are becoming more spiritually fit every day, even if you don't feel, if it doesn't feel like it. Why doesn't it feel like it? Well, sometimes because more problems are stacking onto your life. Right? So just work the process. What's the promise at the end? Let's look at the promise. Suffering produces perseverance. Perseverance produces character. And character produces hope. In the case of problems in life, what's hope? With the belief that that a solution will arrive. That's it. That a solution will arrive. Because without the belief that some solution... And what's the solution? The solution doesn't always mean that the problem will go away. Solution might mean I become able to master this situation even if the problem itself never changes. What if the relationship you're in never gets better? The first day, what does that feel like to be in that relationship? Suffocating, smothering, debilitating. But if you stay on and develop more spiritual fitness, and the other party in that situation doesn't change, but you are gradually developing more spiritual fitness, what will happen? You become better able to stay in that situation. So in that sense, perseverance does produce character. Right? And that character does produce hope, because before you were just going to throw the whole thing away and you're going to say now, okay, I think I can stay in this. I think I can manage this. All right, so we turn over to, I think we're going to 1 Peter for just a moment. So, I'm sorry, 2 Peter. Not a new text here. All right, first chapter. I'm going to start at the fifth verse. For this very reason, make every effort to add to your faith. And if we back up to the Romans text, we say, okay, faith is the start of this journey with God. Without the faith, there is no journey with God. So make every effort to add. So faith is the baseline. Without faith, you've got nothing. So everything is an addition to faith, which is the bedrock essential. So make every effort to add to your faith goodness. If we look at the Romans text, why is that important? Because if I'm doing my part to walk in God's favor every day, doesn't it make it easier for me to believe that I'm walking in God's grace? See, I'm walking no less in God's love when I'm being disobedient than when I'm being obedient. But my experience of God's love is going to be thwarted by my disobedience. Does that make sense? So when I add goodness to my faith, I'm adding my part to facilitate good relationship. And it makes it easier for me to experience God's grace. It's not that God's grace isn't there. It makes it easier for me to experience it. So to your faith you add goodness, and to your goodness knowledge. Because if you don't know this stuff, you can't do it. And to your knowledge, self-control, and to your self-control, perseverance. To perseverance, godliness, and to godliness, brotherly kindness, and brotherly kindness, love. So look at how many steps along the way there are before you even get to this process of perseverance. All right. Questions? Comments? Okay, so I want to look at problems for a minute here. Because this was the big theme for the morning. I know this is exciting stuff, but problems. Good or bad? Explain yourself.
Challenges we work through with faith. Whole perseverance.
Your 20-year-old self. I meet up with Vinny, he's 20, and I say, would you like a life with problems or without problems?
20-year-old me would probably punch you in the face.
Okay, well, after that, you'd have another problem.
I went looking for problems, but at least then I thought I was alive. I think I was a problem. I define myself as a problem. For all of my past at 20 years old, where now at 38, I realize other people have problems.
All right, let's read together what's at the top of the back side of your first page. I think it is, solutions always lie behind the problems they are intended to address. Therefore, there are now, always have been, and must always be problems. You understand that? Solutions will always lag behind the problems that they need to address. And since there is just inherently problems that will occur in your life, you will always be looking for solutions in one area or another of your life. If you are not at peace with that, you will struggle for all of your life.
That's the problem. We want a problem for your life. That's the problem. Because there will be problems. It's life.
In light of that, I was just what he just said. I was thinking about this past week, and it had to do with, I read something somewhere about a guy who felt that at first when he was younger he thought, you know, I've been born at the wrong time. I wish I had been born hundreds of years ago when there was the need for heroes, but now there doesn't seem to be the need for heroes in the same way. Well, and don't dismiss this as the idle thoughts of a young man, because it's really not. Don't you want your life to count for something? Don't you want your life to matter? You see, we all want to be a hero. I know that sounds so lame, but when you remove all the cape nonsense and all that, we all want to solve a major problem. There's something in us that just wants to do that. And so he felt, I've been born at a time when that's no longer possible. Right? All the great lands have been reached and explored and seen and all that. But there's still plenty of real problems to solve in this life. All right. So, let's break problems down into three types of problems. There are problems for which a solution exists. But you haven't found it. Okay, so think about a situation in your life where you were experiencing a problem, and then, I don't know, let's just make this real. You Googled myproblem.com, and there was the solution to your problem, right? Right? The solution existed, you just didn't know it. Right? We've all encountered that. Right? If you have a financial problem, there's probably a solution to it. Why? Because you're not the first person to have that problem, and therefore a solution has already been developed. You just don't know that the solution to your problem exists. That could be true for a problem that you're experiencing right now. The next situation is that the solution is broken. It needs an upgrade, it needs a repair, whatever it is. All right, so we're going to think of a car tire. I know this is a lame thing, but it makes it easy to understand. Have you ever had a flat? Is a tire a good solution to making your car roll down the road?
Yes.
Of course it is. Right? But the solution is broken. Solutions that are broken regularly have backup solutions in them. What's the backup solution? It is, right? Have your finances ever been broken? Do you have a backup, a spare tire for your finances? And you're laughing about that, but do you? Because a lot of people don't think that their solution needs a backup system. Any problem that is encountered often enough, even if it's a good solution is going to break from time to time. Do you have backup solutions for those things in your life? And we said financial because it's easy to see that. What happens when you don't have a backup, a spare tire for your finances? Well, we know what happens, right? I mean, you're all sitting there blank-faced like you don't know, like you've never been in this situation. Do you want me to explain to you what happens when you don't have a backup for your financial solutions? Yes, you do. Right, there you go. You go into further debt to fund whatever it is that you need. So when you don't have $20,000 plus that you can lay hands on to fix your foundation wall, you, as Ram was describing this problem to me this morning, you go into debt to get that $20,000 solution. All right, then there's another hole. And don't miss this when it comes to relational things. Do you have backup relational solutions? This is another biggie. And then there's the third one, which solutions don't yet exist. I'm going to just share with you a little bit of my own situation. Maybe you'll find it true for you as well. I like to buy my solutions.
Buy.
If I can, I just like to buy an already solved problem. Right? Because it's quicker that way. Right? I mean, if I could, I would, like, if I was, and don't we all do this? What do you do when you're sick? Do you say, I wonder if I could develop a drug to fix myself, or do you go to the drugstore? Right? We do that, right? Don't dismiss that as being a superficial illustration. How many times in life do you desperately flail around looking for a ready-made solution because the hard work of solving the problem in a better way would just take too long and be too inconvenient? Don't we all do that? I am convinced that the reason that there aren't more great solutions, as a matter of fact, I am convinced that the reason that there are so many problems in the world is because we would rather take the easy way out and apply a Band-Aid current tense solution that somebody else has already prepared than do the hard work of seeking a better, more improved solution. What if that's true for our relationships? You've been given some relational advice, and it sounds good, and so you employ that in your situation, and it doesn't work. And then what do? You give up on it.
Think about it, noting when there are solutions that are beyond your control. I mean, particularly the relationship with your children. And they can have problems that really come to your heart. But they have to fix that problem, and you have nothing you can do about it. But it could also be the biggest problem in your life.
As it pertains to that, though,
and that one is the one that built the most faith in me.
Here's the interesting thing. It's Paul's problem from an agony perspective. It's the child's problem from the experiential perspective. So Paul's problem is to develop the... Because what would we like to do? What would you like to do at that situation?
Hey.
Right? He would.
If
throwing money at it would fix the problem, you'd do it. Whatever you could throw at the problem to make the problem better, you would do it. But is it your problem to solve? It's not. So what's necessary at that time? We've already looked at it. Perseverance. Perseverance in managing yourself, which develops a degree of character in yourself, while you perhaps wait on God or apply the small incremental bits of leverage or influence that you do have. So Paul has legitimate influence, but remember the text in the fourth chapter of James we looked at where you step outside the legitimate solution and short-circuit the process. Now, I don't know if Paul has ever done this. Have you ever had a relationship that you were struggling with, and so you just go in there gangbusters, guns a-blazing, and you're just going to fix the problem?
No.
We're going to have this conversation.
No.
We're going to have this conversation now, and you're going to listen, and when you're done listening to me, the problem's going to be solved.
Jim Levin.
Okay, apparently I am the only one in the room who has ever short-circuited the solution that way.
I was thinking I'm still married to her. I'm feeling really blessed.
So in that case, the problem that we can't fix does build perseverance. Okay, I want to see if there's anything else that I need to do. I need to get us out of here a little bit early. Okay, here's another one. We've kind of covered it. Bottom of your first page here. See if this has ever happened to you. you're somewhere out of town. Get a motel room for the night. Maybe you're on vacation. Maybe you're traveling somewhere or whatever. Maybe it's business. And you need to get something to eat. So there's a place that you could get food that's right down the street, but instead of just walking there, you've been driving all day. You're accustomed to driving. Have you ever jumped in your car and driven somewhere and then thought later, you know, this was stupid. I should have walked there. Has that ever happened to you? Or am I the only person that that's ever happened to? Like, what was I thinking? Why would I do that? Now, why? Why drive there? When it was so obvious after the fact that you could have walked there? Because we're so in the habit of using certain solutions to solve immediate problems that we never stop to think that there's a better or a different solution. You know the old, the joke-ish textbook, what's the definition of insanity? To continue to do the same thing over and over again in spite of the fact that you don't get the result that you want. Could that be true in your relationships? Could that be true in something in your career? Could it be true in your ministry? That you continue to employ the same solutions that aren't working that you're in the habit of, that I'm in the habit of employing. Is there a better solution? A not just an alternative, but even a third or a fourth option that is available to you. I believe that one of the things that perseverance develops in us is the time that it takes to gain perspective and look for additional options. So if something isn't working in a relationship, could you try something else? If talking isn't working in the relationship, could you attempt action that would demonstrate something? If talking and action have failed, could you demonstrate just patient endurance for a while? In other words, could you keep your mouth shut? I know I struggle with that, but maybe you could do that better than I can. What is the third or the fourth or the fifth option that is available to us if only we would step outside the rut of continuing to look at things the same way?
Is there a dichotomy to suffering? If we believe that God is going to take us through whatever we're facing, if we really believe what Paul's talking about, what James is talking about, we can see that in the struggle there's progress. But if God is not Lord of our lives, we're just failing. You look at Job's friends, when he was going through that, his friends assumed that he was sinning. The man who was blind that Jesus healed, whose sin causes man to be blind? Him or his parents? Not believing that God is directing them, Jesus responds as being the glory of God that we show. The world wants us to believe suffering is a bad thing.
And just to be clear, it doesn't mean that we should rush into suffering. That's not what's being implied here. But when you find yourself in a situation where difficulty is just dealt to you, then to be able to walk through it rather than short-circuit it. Let's go back to this text in James. Because the only thing that James doesn't say is our part of the equation here, that we're talking about the first chapter of James 1, because you know that the testing of your faith develops perseverance. Perseverance must finish its work, and this is the part where we said you've got to stay in the situation until you have the breakthrough. Perseverance must finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything. And then only after that does he insert this idea. If any of you lacks wisdom, he should ask God, who gives generously to all without finding fault. So when are you to ask for wisdom? When you're already in the middle of persevering. So the kind of wisdom that you're asking for is not the kind of wisdom to get you out of the jam. It is to take you successfully through the problem and find a legitimate solution that takes you to the other side. That's where the wisdom is needed. The scriptures have a lot of examples of people praying for help to go through something. They have fewer examples of the people that we would call the icons or the heroes in scripture. There are not many examples of them saying, just get me out of this mess. The prayers instead tend to be, help me go through the mess to the other side. That's an altogether different approach. And the amazing thing is, as we go through life, we're counseled by myriad messages The goal of life is to find ease, happiness, satisfaction, and security. It brings us back to the guy that I said wanted to be the hero, and he felt like there were no opportunities to be a hero anymore. And the amazing thing is that we've got two messages going on at the same time. How does the Army recruit people today? What's their message? What's the overall, overarching theme? Just look at the visuals. What are the visuals in the television commercials?
Be all that you can be.
It's adventure. It's excitement. It's passion. It's jumping out of things, doing this cool stuff, blowing things up. Does it ever say, you may die tomorrow, sign up today? Right? That's a really bad recruiting strategy, isn't it? But what's the truth of the matter? You may die tomorrow. So we always, in all popular media, tends to want to distance us from risk. There is no opportunity apart from risk. Until you and I are comfortable with the idea that problems are our lot in life, to be solved, to be worked through, and that is the way life is supposed to work, you and I will not be at peace with life. We'll be angry. We'll be disappointed with God. We'll feel that God has dealt us some unusual hand because we have problems. No, problems are everybody's lot in life. It's just your willingness to embrace that and accept that, to rejoice in that. That's what the scriptures say, to rejoice in that, that is going to transform your understanding. I think, because it's going to take too long to do the next part, I think we should probably just be done right now so that I can guarantee that we're out of here by 9:00.